Matt's third release, third round knockout coming out fairly soon in North America. Can you tell us a little bit more about the concept and ideas of this release?
Well, it follows, you know, in the footsteps of Clone Division, I guess. We stick to the old themes and the same cliches and the whole atmosphere of just party time, rock and roll, and good crafted songs, you know. So, yeah, for me, it's my first album with the band, but I got to join them right in the start of the process of the new songwriting, so yeah, it was a pleasure to take part of that and also be a part of a very new album, which I think turned out great, and in the same vein as the old ones and how Chrome should sound, you know.
And how do you came up as, you know, a candidate to be the new vocalist of the band?
I had the perfect audition. Yeah, it was February of 2009. Chrome Division was scheduled to have their very first international gig outside Norway in Germany. And just 3-4 weeks before this, Eddie Gus calls the guys and says that for some reason, I can't even remember why, he can't make the show. And desperate to not cancel their first announced international show, they asked me if I could step in on short notice. And I must admit, I didn't know the songs all too well back then. But once I got into it, I really thought this was right up my alley. So yeah, we rehearsed for some 3-4 weeks and went down and did the gig, and it was, you know, a massive, huge success. You know, the crowd went wild, and the media just, yeah, why don't you sing instead and all that stuff, you know. I was kind of sad that this was just a one-time thing for me, and yeah, you know, I had such a good time. But to my big surprise, they called me again later that year and said to me that Eddie is now finally out of the band, so you're offered the position, and took me 3.5 seconds to say yes, you know.
And how much do you identify with the whole, you know, rock and roll party theme of the band?
You know, I like to say that Chrome Division is our sanctuary. I mean, we're a bunch of friends, all in other bands, which, you know, are our day jobs and all that stuff, and hard work, stress related, and business and all that bullshit, you know. So it's so nice to just come together as a group of friends and have this band where we can just let everything go. We don't have to take ourselves that serious, you know. We can just, you know, put on some shades and leather jackets and, you know, dance around in music videos with half-naked women and make, you know, just pure rock and roll, and just we don't give a fuck, you know. But we take it serious, the music, of course, but look at the image. It's just so cliche, you know, but we're aware of that, and we think it's hilarious, you know.
And, you know, in terms of, okay, yeah, this is an outlet, but it's kind of getting serious. Are you guys afraid that it's going to become your second job or rather than your fun band?
Well, it would be wrong to say that we don't hope it becomes successful, because, I mean, even though it's a part-time band, it's not a project, just to underline that. It's a real band, but sadly it comes second in line to all the other stuff we do. But of course, we want it to be successful, because, I mean, I'm so happy to play with these guys, because they're so talented and so skilled musicians, and they make really good songs, you know. And it's, of course, a nice thing when people notice this and appreciate it, and the albums sell enough for us to make another one, you know, and do some concerts and stuff and keep it going. I really want that to happen, but, yeah, you know, we're not, you know, who doesn't want more money? I mean, that's what life's all about, you know, try to make a career and make money and live life as best you can, you know. That's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. So how much were you involved, you know, in the, since you said you were pretty much on since the beginning of the writing of this album, how much input and what are your proudest moments in this release?
I had actually a lot of inputs, and it was also very well received. The thing with Eddie, the old vocalist, is that he had a fantastic, powerful voice, but it was maybe, you know, limited to a certain certain way of doing things. I don't know how to put this, but I mean, I really liked his voice, but it was not very. How do I put this? not step on any toes here, you know. It became very monotone, if I could use that word. Yeah, and I like to be all over the place, you know, high and low, and do all kinds of shit. I'm all into that in all the bands I play in. So once I said to the guys, there's no limits now. You don't have to stick to this and this formula. Just make what the hell you want, you know, and I'll try to do it. I'm not saying I can do everything, but I'll you know, try to my best. And that's how we ended up, you know, with a blues song, and we did a cover of Johnny Cash song, you know, a Western theme song, and then we have some up-tempo songs, some slow stoner rock songs, and I think it's a more diverse Faroid album this time than the older stuff. I love the older stuff, but this time we could just turn things around and make so many different songs, and that we actually managed to pull this off with me in the chair of the as being the singer. I mean, that's one of my proudest moments. I think that, you know, not only have the band accepted me so well, but the fans seem to do it as well. From the feedback, I can, you know, see all around.
And what would you say? It's, I mean, besides the vocal, and what song do you particularly say, oh, that was my idea, and one of the coolest things that you consider?
That would be The Magic Man, the blues song. I talked to Ricky one night, you know, it was getting late at the rehearsal place, and we were all about to go home, and then I talked to him, haven't you talked about doing a blues song in the past? Yeah, we talked about it for many years, but we never got around to do it. And I said, like, well, I have this idea and this for the lyrics and stuff. And he went home and he did some, you know, riffs to this. And I mean, it's quite simple. It's a real standard beginning of a blues song, but it evolves, you know. Halfway through, it becomes, you know, more like stoner rock, and incorporates elements of you know, heavy metal, solo, guitar playing. And I think that song really turned out good. And the lyric is very personal to me, because it's written, you know, about the day where I had my incident, where I got sick 2 years ago. It describes the very day I got sick and my thoughts and reflections around that. So yeah, it's quite personal to me. Bunch of the other lyrics are just made up party go lucky stuff, you know, but this one is actually based on a true situation, you know.
And in terms of, yeah, your health, are you all good and set to keep rocking out, or you have to, you know, take care of yourself a little bit more than before?
Well, I need to take more care of myself now than I did before, no doubt about it. But I'm not, you know, sick as per se now. I need to take care of myself just as any other person really needs to, you know. I mean, people need to stop smoking and you know, drink excessively and do drugs and all that. People need to stop, you know, because you're not immortal just because you haven't become sick yet, you know? You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it took me a fucking kick in the face to realize this, you know? I had to realize this the painful, serious way, but for me now to look back at how I led my life before and get things in perspective, you know, it's a fucking awakening, you know? I mean, I used to be a heavy smoker, for example. I smoked like 30, 40 cigarettes a day, and now I can't be in the same room as people who smoke, you know, because I fear it. I know, I fear for my life, you know, just breathing in the stuff that they put in their lungs, you know. It totally changed me all around. So, but anyway, I'm back to normal. I'm in good shape. I mean, I got lucky. They got to it in time and then did the necessary surgery and replaced the arteries that were clogged up and stuff. And my heart didn't suffer any scar tissue, which would have prevented me from leading a normal life, of course. So, yeah. And I was a young man and healthy in all other aspects. So I got out of it quite lucky. But, yeah, it was a real wake-up call.
Well, it's good to hear that you're doing fine. And and coming along nicely. That now I guess you have more places to draw inspiration for future songs too.
You could say that.
And in terms of your nickname for the band, Shady Blue, how do you come up with that? It sounds, well, in a way, shady.
Yeah. We just joked around, you know. I remember it was one of the first rehearsals, and I said, like, what should I call myself? And, I mean, you're like Tony White, and you're like Ricky Black. So I guess I'm Shady Blue then. And I just bursted it out, and it was like meant as a joke, but of course it was funny to them, and they laughed and laughed and said, yeah, you're not getting away from that name now, that's your name, you know. They thought it was real funny, and yeah, why not? I mean, I step into another role, you know, I become another persona or whatever when I do Chrome Division than when I do Suspiria, you know. So I think it's cool enough and smart to separate those two roles, you know. I can have my hair tied up in a ponytail and wear shades and a leather and white fucking shoes and Chrome Division and be shady, and I can, you know, headbang and wear my black clothes and the metal band Spirit, and, you know, just keep them apart and still, you know, pull inspiration off both characters, but, you know, keep them apart.
Yep, that's exactly it. And how important do you feel that nowadays is, you know, having this whole image and persona versus, you know, being just another band that just plays music, goes on stage with, you know, a t-shirt and jeans, stuff like that?
You know, there are too many bands around, so in order to stick out in these days, you have to do something crazy. And I'm not saying that we're doing anything real original or something. I mean, look at our latest video. It could be like something out of Motley Crue and from 1985, you know. But we have just chosen to go with this style, you know. Sunglasses, leather jackets, Harley Davidson, you know, whiskey, half-naked women, you know, the whole sleaze look, you know. And I mean, it works for us. We think it's hilarious, and then, you know, it just fits hand in hand with the sleaze rock and roll we make, and it's not something original, but it, for some strange reason, works really well. Either people hate it or they love it, so that's how it goes.
And have you had any, you know, fans come up to you and say, oh, you sold out with this band, blah, 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 or pretty much people have been mellow about it?
I mean, what the hell is selling out? I mean, there's so many different levels of selling out. I've lost control of all the accusations. I don't know, I can't follow this anymore, but I mean, we're not selling out at all, because Chrome Division is not at all about business. It's not business related. It's just, you know, our sanctuary to just make good music and have fun and, you know, live our lives the way we do. And I mean, we're musicians and that's what we do, and we don't want to get caught up in just one thing, you know. We like to, yeah, stay in touch with other people and mingle with other people and, you know, do different stuff. It's just, you know, how we live, you know.
Yep. And you know, in terms of touring, do you guys have any plans of taking the new album on the road?
We really want to. These times we have a steady lineup, and this would be the right time, you know. I mean, Chrome Division in its what is it now, 7 or 8 year history has done maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 shows. It's a disgrace, you know. But when you have a singer who can't even make one show per year, then it's about time he, you know, you tell him to step aside and then let someone else handle the job. And that's what it all came down to, you know. He was replaced, I replaced him, and but still, it's not easy to have your guitarist also being in the world's biggest black metal band, you know.
Yeah.
The schedule surrounding Dimmu Borgir can change overnight, you know. And they're out for the new album and they're going on tour again after the summer, so yeah, we would have to take this, you know, almost like on a day-by-day basis, because we don't want to commit ourselves to something cool and then the time comes and like, oh shit, we can't do it after all, and that creates a bad reputation, you know. So we want to be there when we say we're going to be there, you know?
Yep, that is true. So I guess, yes?
Yeah, there have been some offers and agents and promoters all around Europe and then USA have, you know, sent us emails and called us all the time, like, we want you, you have to come now, fuck, the people are waiting for you and all that stuff, and it's really flattering to hear, and it's flattering and frustrating because we really want to do it, you know, so yeah, we're keeping the doors open, and yeah, if it's going to happen, it's going to be this year, I think.
And what would you say would be, you know, the ideal stage setup to fully represent, you know, the whole band's concept?
Well, that's easy. Just let us play at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Los Angeles. that's the dream venue for Crow Division, you know, play at the legendary Whiskey. And, yeah, I think it, that evening would just go by itself, you know. I mean, we would come with our simple stage setup and just focus on the music and the atmosphere and just create a, yeah, a killer sound. That's what it's all about.
And after all these years that you've been involved in music and everything, how do you see that, you know, the writing process is in Crow Division versus your other band?
Well, after writing, was it 60 or 70 lyrics for Suspiria now, which are all about depression and dark, fucked up stuff. I mean, it's so liberating to be a part of this band where it's no holds barred. You can write about what you want, you know, and girls, boots, beer, Belzebub, you know, just party time. It's totally ridiculous, but it works, this kind of music. It's meant to be easy listening and sing along and, you know, so yeah, it's quite liberating to write this lyrics. They don't have to be that serious and meaningful.
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, yeah. It was just kind of fading off. Yeah, no, so, I mean, what are your plans? You know, what, I mean, you want to, for the band, what, I mean, yeah, you guys, you know, they're just friend, you're trying to make it work now a little bit wider. What are your plans, your personal goals for this band?
My goals for Crow Division.
Uh-huh.
Well, back to the frustration of not being able to play live, I know that this band could go in all the way if we had the right setting, you know, the right situation around us, surrounding us. All respect to Shagrath for having Dimmu Borgir and all that stuff, but at the same time, I wish that people didn't have all these other things to do, because if we gave full throttle, you know, the Crow Division, gave it 100% and went on many tours and stuff, I know we could build a band and raise it to a much higher level, and yeah, it would be interesting to see how far we could take it. I mean, of the few shows we have done now lately, I mean, the response, the reactions, it's amazing, you know, like playing festivals in Germany and stuff. I mean, it just makes you want to do it more, even more, you know. So my goal is to convince the guys that we have to push for this now. You know, we have a great album out and everybody wants us to play, so we should take advantage of it, you know, and make it happen.
Yeah, and how do you see that fans in Europe have reacted to the release, since the album's been out for a couple a week or so in Europe?
It's it's been really good. I was a bit nervous about how the reactions would be, you know, concerning the change of singer, because that's real heavy point in a band, you know, where you can replace a drummer and a guitarist anytime maybe, but the voice of a band is so present, you know, so when it changes, it can affect some diehard fans in a very not so positive way, but I think I managed to convince them that this worked out after all. I mean, I have a different voice and it sounds a bit different naturally, but I paid respect to the whole theme, you know, the whole essence of Chrome. I paid respect to it at the same time as I put my own personal stamp on it. So with that fine balance, I think I managed to convince the people that it worked out. So, you know, a occasionally there's someone who just hates me and wants the old guy back, but it's the minority, you know, and I was expecting that anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's always people that want to stay in the past.
Yeah.
Oh, and so kind of in general, are there like any, kind of wrapping things up, are there any things you want to say to the people in North America that are waiting for this release and waiting for you guys to make it over here?
Well, I can start by apologizing for the pushing of the album. I guess it was supposed to be out last week, but for some reason it was pushed until sometime in June, and I don't know why, but I'm sorry for that, and hope you can just be a bit patient a bit more, and you have something very nice to look forward to, and I think you'll be pleased with the result, and I just hope that you all welcome me into the band and give me a chance to show myself in a good way. And I know our fans have been waiting for a long time for us to come and play, but believe me, we have waited as long, so we're talking to some people now, and all those, then it's not impossible that we will come over the pond and do a week or two in the United States, with, you know, playing in some key places. So just keep your eyes and ears open, and in the meantime, enjoy the new album.